Good evening.
Good evening.
Great to be back with you tonight. Appreciate your presence here so that we can study God's Word together. As was mentioned, continue to keep Mr. Mel in your prayers. They scheduled a heart cath for tomorrow is when he's supposed to have that, and so I definitely want to remember him in your prayers. Pray that if they do find anything through that, that it'll be minor, something that they can easily fix, and so he can get about his normal routine soon. Mr. Mel is not one to sit still for very long. I joked with Miss Cynthia when I was texting with her that I was really surprised that he had not made a break for it yet, grabbed his golf clubs, and headed to the course. But she said they were preventing him from doing that. So they've been at Baptist East all weekend, and hopefully after that heart cath, he'll be able to come home very soon. This morning we began with a question of who is God? And we said before we wanted to really answer that question, we needed to answer another question, and that was the question, does God exist? And we set out looking at three different arguments for the existence of God. We noticed one of those arguments in its entirety this morning. We looked at the cosmological argument. We said this was an argument based on causation. That if something exists, then something had to bring that into existence. And under this argument, we talked about the origin of the universe. And how that the evolutionist theory of the Big Bang is not an adequate cause to bring about that material effect. From that, we talked about how life came from non-life. And we noticed the fact that in order for evolution to be true, for the Big Bang to bring about everything that we know, at some point life had to come from non-life. We noticed how these ideas violated scientific law, and they just weren't possible. So that brings us now to our second argument that we want to notice, and that is the teleological argument. The teleological argument. You know it better as an argument from design. The law of teleology states where there is design, there must of necessity be a designer. If you're driving down the road and you see a house, none of us think in our minds, hey, wow, that house just popped up all on its own, do it. We understand that there was a lot that went into making that house come into existence, right? There was a plan that was laid out on how to build that house. The materials were gathered. They were assembled according to that plan. There was a lot that took place in order for that house to come into existence. God said it this way in Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 4. For every house is built by someone, but he who built all things is God. William Paley in 1802 wrote a book entitled Natural Theology. And in that book, he referenced the idea of a watch. And that no one would look at a watch and think that that watch just came into existence on its own. I mean, if you look at a nice watch, and I'm not talking about digital, I'm talking about hands on the watch. If you look inside that thing and you see all these intricate little gears and how everything works together, there's no doubt in your mind that someone designed that. If nature, if this universe, if our planet, if human beings, if animals, if we exhibit design, then there must have been a designer. This, if we look at the different arguments, this to me is a very powerful argument. Because looking at our world today, there's design. Hebrews chapter 19 and verse 1, the psalmist says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows His handiwork. Romans chapter 1 and verse 20, Paul wrote, for since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. You know, many times the atheist will say, well, if God exists, then why doesn't He just show Himself? Paul says, guess what? He has. He has shown Himself in the world around us and in ourselves. Richard Dawkins, we mentioned him this morning, a staunch atheist and evolutionist. And I mentioned him because we were going to notice a quote from him tonight. Richard Dawkins wrote the book entitled The Blind Watchmaker. He played off of William Paley's book, Natural Theology, where he referenced the watch as an example of design. And so he wrote a book entitled The Blind Watchmaker. Here's what he said. He said, natural selection which that is the vehicle of evolution, the blind, unconscious, automatic process which Darwin discovered, and which we now know is the explanation for the existence and apparently purposeful form of all life, has no purpose in mind. It has no mind and no mind's eye. It does not plan for the future. It has no vision, no foresight, no sight at all. If it can be said to play the role of watchmaker in nature, it is the blind watchmaker. According to Dawkins, if there is any design at all that we think we see, it must be considered as merely apparent design, attributable to natural selection, but not a designer. That design that we think we see, it's just apparent, but it's not really there. His statement made me recall Abe Lincoln talking to a group of reporters one time. President Lincoln said to this group of reporters, he said, "Gentlemen, if I call my dog's tail a leg, how many legs does my dog have?" And a bunch of them spoke up and said, "Well, 5, Mr. President." He said, "No, fellas. My dog still has 4 legs. Calling a tail a leg does not make it so." And Dawkins can call the design apparent design if he wants to, but that doesn't make it so. For evolution to be true, every process in our bodies must have come about by natural selection through small changes over time. The cardiovascular system and the complexities of it, the respiratory system, the neurological system, the complex information packets in our cells, the reproductive system. Think about that for a moment. In order for humankind to exist, you had to have a male and a female. Both evolved the ability to reproduce at the same time in the same geographic location. And if it didn't happen that way, guess what? The human race ceases to exist. Y'all, when you begin to look at the odds of all of this coming together perfectly, it's practically zero without there being some other person or design at work. Darwin even wrote in his book, "If it could be demonstrated that any complex organ existed which could not possibly have been formed by numerous successive slight modifications, my theory would absolutely break down." In the context of that statement, guess what Darwin brings up? He brings up the eye, which is probably one of the best cases of design in humans, and the complexity of it. But for our purposes tonight, I want us to go outside of the human body. And I want us to look at a relationship that is truly unique. And that is the relationship between our earth and the sun. 4 things that we want to notice about this relationship. Number 1, we want to notice the fact that the earth and the sun set at the just right distance. The sun, as you can imagine, emits a large amount of heat and radiation. I mean, you think about it, it sits 93 million miles away from us, but yet it heats our planet. And so there's a ton amount of heat and radiation that sits out. But that 93 million miles, as we learn, is the just right distance. The sun also emits very destructive pressure waves as it converts matter to energy. But the 93 million miles provides a buffer between the sun and the earth. If the earth were moved only 10% closer to the sun, just move it 10% closer, life on this earth would cease to exist. The temperatures would become too high and the earth would be flooded with deadly radiation. If the sun were moved just 10% further away from us, life on this earth would cease to exist. Too little heat would be absorbed and we would all freeze to death. Either scenario would spell doom for life on this earth. Did a big bang place the earth at the just right distance? Or was it placed there by an all-powerful designer? A second thing we want to notice is that the earth sits at the just right tilt. If you've ever looked at a globe, if you've ever noticed, most of the time those globes are tilted just a little bit, right? That's because that's how the earth sits. It's tilted at about 23.5 degrees, which happens to be the just right tilt. If the earth was not tilted, but was straight as it traveled around the sun, the poles would be even colder than they are today, and the equator would be much hotter. Also, there would be no seasons on the earth, which would make the growing of crops for food very difficult. If the earth was tilted all the way over at 90 degrees, the earth would switch from extremely hot to extremely cold. Did a Big Bang place the earth on the just right tilt? Or was it tilted by an all-powerful designer? A third thing that we want to notice is the fact that the earth rotates at the just right rotation. The earth is rotating on its axis at 1,000 miles per hour at the equator. And it's moving around the sun at 70,000 miles per hour, which happens to be the just right rotation. This rotation provides the earth with periods of light and darkness, which is necessary for sustaining life on the planet. If the earth rotated faster, then fierce cyclones would stir over the earth, making the planet uninhabitable. If the earth rotated much slower, then the days would be impossibly hot and the nights would be impossibly cold. Once again, did the Big Bang start the earth spinning with that just right rotation? Or was it rotated by an all-powerful designer? Fourth and finally, the earth orbits at the just right orbit. You know, if you look at the orbit of the earth around the sun, it's not a perfect circle. It's an elliptical, actually, which is the just right orbit for the sun and the earth. As the earth moves on its orbit around the sun, it departs from a straight line by only 1/9 of an inch every 18 miles. All right? So as it goes 1/9 of an inch every 18 miles, that gives it that elliptical form that it has. If it departed by 1/8 of an inch, we would come too close to the sun and we would be incinerated. If it departed by 1/10 of an inch, we would find ourselves for periods too far from the sun and we would freeze to death. Did a Big Bang put the earth on the just right orbit? Or once again, was it placed there by an all-powerful designer? You look at just these four things, and I would think it becomes apparent that there's no way this happened by chance. There's no way a cosmic explosion caused the earth to be what it is. The earth is the way that it is because God designed it that way. And you know, there's so many other things you could look at under this point of design here. As we said, you could talk about different things concerning the human body. You could look at the animals and the different things going on there. You can look at nature and how it all works together. There are so many examples of design in the world around us. And those designs point to a designer. That brings us to our third and final argument that we want to notice. And that is the anthropological argument. The anthropological argument. You want a $5 word, there's your $5 word for the night. Anthropological. This is an argument based on mankind, based on society, culture, and their development over time. The anthropological argument is an argument that deals with man. And there are a lot of different parts to this argument that we can notice. One for me, since I like math, that's really interesting is population statistics. You know, if you look at the population of the earth, and if mathematicians, if they ran statistics on the growth of the population, taking into account major disasters that take place and plagues and things like that, you know, when they run the numbers, if you consider the earth to have been here around 10,000 years, you know what figure they come up with? Roughly the population of the earth today. But if they run those same figures for the millions and millions and millions of years that would be needed for evolution to be true, you know what they come up with? A world that couldn't hold the number of people. Another argument that is used is, once again, the human body. This is one of those things that falls under both design and anthropological, but looking at the human body. The existence of language. How did that come about? How is it that you and I have developed language over the years when no other animals have done that? But I want us to zero in on one argument. And that is the argument from morality. All human beings have some kind of moral code. Now, the exceptions to that, that bars being a psychopathic or a sociopath. We have to take those are mental illnesses. We have to take those out of the scenario because those people do not develop a moral code at all. But everyone else develops some kind of moral code. All human beings believe some things are right and some things are wrong. And we might not always agree on the exact way to determine what is right and wrong, but it is undeniable that the concepts of right and wrong, of good and evil, exist in the world around us. So the question becomes, from where did those concepts originate? Every time we argue over right and wrong, we appeal to a higher law that we assume everyone is aware of, that everyone holds to, and that it's not free to arbitrarily change. You ask people, they're stealing, people will say, yeah, that's wrong. Murder, yeah, that's wrong. Rape, yes, that's wrong. There are things that universally are believed to be wrong. From where did those morals come? Right and wrong imply a higher standard or a higher law. And you know what a law requires? A lawgiver. You can't have a law, friends, without a lawgiver. And because this moral law transcends humanity, in other words, it's a universal law, that requires, guess what? A universal lawgiver. This, it is argued, is God. Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15, Paul wrote, "For when Gentiles who do not have the law," speaking of the law of Moses, "by nature do the things that are in the law," what were they doing? They were doing things that were understood to be right and wrong. "These, although not having the law of Moses, are a law to themselves, who show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and between themselves, their thoughts accusing or else excusing them." Paul talks about the fact that there were certain things that the Gentiles, even though they didn't have the law of Moses, they understood things were right and things were wrong. The atheist would say that man came up with this code all by himself. Well, that presents a problem. Because for the atheist, man is nothing more than an animal. Man is nothing more than an individual who evolved from a lower animal. You know, the lion doesn't feel guilty for eating the gazelle, does it? A dog doesn't feel remorse after stealing another dog's bone. But man feels both guilt and remorse. The fact that we even discuss morality shows the existence in humans of a moral code. When did one ape ever say to another ape, "Hey, let's talk about right and wrong today"? It doesn't happen. The atheist George Gaylord Simpson of the Harvard University stated that morals arise only in man. The question then becomes, what, or should we more accurately say, who is responsible for man's morality? Brethren, these are three arguments. The cosmological argument, the teleological argument, the anthropological argument. These three arguments from logic show to those who are willing to listen, to those who are willing to look, that indeed the God of heaven does exist. So I ask you tonight, are you following him? Friend, if you're not, we would encourage you to begin that right now, this evening. If you're not a Christian, we would encourage you to do that. Put Christ on in baptism. Begin that journey tonight. I realize looking out, most of you, many of you have done that. Are you living faithfully or have you turned away from him? Friend, come back home. We serve a God who stands with open arms waiting for his child to come to him. Do you need to come to him tonight? If so, we'd ask you to do it right now as we stand and sing.